Welcome to episode 96 of Frank Reactions, the podcast where we help you profit from the digital era through better customer experience online and off. My name is Tema Frank. Today, it gives me great pleasure to be able to bring you an interview with one of my personal heroes, Jill Conrath, who is really the business-to-business sales guru. One of my biggest failings as an entrepreneur is that I really shy away from doing sales. I've taken lots of sales training, some of it very good, some of it not so good. I've read tons of sales books, including Jill's excellent, and I think it was her first one, Selling to Big Companies. In an era where customer experience, marketing, and sales have all become thoroughly intertwined, I think it's really crucial that we all have a better understanding of each of those disciplines and how they relate to one another. Recently, Jill put out a new book called More Sales, Less Time, which is really more of a time and productivity management book than a sales book. But our conversation, which starts with a bit about the new book, I think gives you insight into the time pressures faced by your customers and prospects, as well as any personal struggles that you might have with time management. For a long time, we've been asking, is cold calling dead? And for many of us, desperately wishing that it were. But in our conversation today, Jill Conrath really kind of almost flipped it around and got me wondering, is inbound marketing dead? The thing is, the massive growth of content on the internet means that getting discovered just through inbound marketing is getting to be pretty much impossible. So let's dig in and learn more about how we can improve customer experience by improving how our organizations sell. Chat with you briefly at the end of the episode.
I am Jill Conrath. I am a sales researcher, a sales geek who is constantly looking for new things in the sales field that make a difference.
Your newest book, More Sales, Less Time, is interesting. And I know you, of course, as the business-to-business and selling to big companies guru. What was your background, Jill? How did you get into sales?
I actually started out at Xerox in sales, knocking on doors in the streets of St. Paul and Minneapolis area. And after that, I moved into technology sales, and then I moved into a small company where it was focused on sales development, and then I started my own company and have been doing consulting. I spent many, many years doing consulting on product launches and helping people jumpstart new product launches, new sales of their new services, etc. And then I actually decided it was time to start sharing my expertise with the world after I saw the changes in the market that were happening.
Which is, I think, has even accelerated more over the years you've been doing this. One of the things that really struck me in reading your new book was just the fact that we are all so time-stressed and we're all so overwhelmed with too much email, too much stuff to read. You know, the positive side is we can get information on our prospects. The downside is we can be drowned in it. Can you talk a little bit maybe about that first? How do you whip that into control?
I think that there is a phrase that I heard recently that says, I overwork, therefore I am. And I heard that and I went, oh, if that isn't exactly how so many of us are feeling these days. And there's some recent research that's come out that talks about people in North America and in particular Northern Europe too, and how we really view being crazy busy as a badge of honor, that it makes us feel important, that it makes us feel needed, in demand, et cetera. Mm-hmm. While in other areas of the world, being crazy busy is viewed as like you don't have everything under control and you're a lower class person who can't keep mm-hmm. up with things and don't have your world in order. So that's kind of the essence of where I was looking at things. And I was also feeling just, I was crazy busy myself and I went, this has to stop. But I couldn't figure out what it took. So I literally invested myself hours of time trying to get to the bottom of my own issue mm-hmm. first, before I tackled anything else.
And do you feel that you have managed to tackle yours successfully?
Absolutely. Really? I won't give you my whole story on that. But not absolutely, I would say absolutely overall, but not on a moment-by-moment basis. because I believe that there are moments when you are very efficient, and what you need to have is you need to have more of those times than you would before, so that you can get your right work done and the best work done that you do, and you don't have to be so guarded all the time that you're protecting yourself from the online environment. And by the way, it was the fact that I was living in a digital world and understanding that the human brain is wired for distraction, and when we actually get online, our amygdala, the ancient part of our brain, jumps to the forefront unless we're really diligent and says, hey, let me take this over. There's all sorts of new stuff out there, and I'm going to check it out and make sure it's safe. But meanwhile, we click on every link. We watch videos that we don't want to watch. We find ourselves looking at a slideshow that shows celebrity before and after pictures. And then we go, how in the world did I get here? I was just simply trying to find out a little bit about my customers on LinkedIn, and I'm watching these celebrity plastic surgery fails. I mean, it's like, what happened? But that is the lure of the digital world that all of us have to learn how to deal with. And none of us were trained with using technology as simply a tool. Mm-hmm. We've become immersed in it, and it's taken over our lives.
Sales is about really understanding your prospects and prospective customers. In an era where you can, as you say, start on LinkedIn, but then go from there and look at the company's annual reports and look at all these different types of information to arm yourself for a conversation, how do you know when enough is enough? Because I find I manage to avoid the celebrity photos, but I still find when I sit down to research a company, I end up spending way too much time. And maybe that's just because I have telephone phobia, right? So it's a great way to stall getting on the phone.
It is. See, and I would challenge you right back on that one. And that's probably the root cause of what you're doing, because you don't want to take that information and have to pull it together to actually use it.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you know, the better. And so you just keep researching and researching. I think, honestly, if you want to step back and say, what do we need to know and how much research should we do? I really think every company should establish a baseline checklist in terms of things that you should be looking for. For example, I could go deep and wide and I could explore everything about these companies. But the truth of the matter is, like, when I go on and look at things, I know what I'm looking for when I research companies. I'm very specific in terms of I'm looking at their growth. I'm looking at products that they're coming out with. I'm looking at their target market. I'm looking at potential issues that they might have. I'm looking at some very specific issues. Mm-hmm. And if they're not experiencing those issues, it's probably not a good fit.
Right.
And so, you know, and then I look for who are the decision makers. And even when I look at their profiles, I am looking for very specific things. And I think once you become cognizant that there are some things that make a difference and some things that are nice to know but not necessary, and that's what we all have to start saying. What is necessary that I have to look for so that I can efficiently get online and find the information I need that will help me do my job better, so I can prep for the meeting, prep for a phone call, you know, whatever I'm going to be doing.
So I would assume then that the what is necessary, I mean, there are some things that are probably relevant to almost every sale, like, you know, you have a certain size customer you're going after. But I would imagine that there's a lot then that also depends on what it is you're trying to sell. So you're looking for specific things.
You're looking for some very specific challenges that they might be facing. For example, to me, the biggest thing to look for most people is trigger events and what kinds of things are happening in the organization or in their market segment or in their, sometimes it's in compliance and legislation that's going on that is changing the grip of the status quo. Because this stuff is happening, like a new leader comes into the company, anytime a new leader comes into the company, they have to make their mark soon. It's like they have to mm-hmm. feel like a dog in a fire hydrant, you know, they have to pee on their company. I really make some changes here.
Right.
I own this fire hydrant now.
Yeah.
I mean, if you take a look at that, for example, if anybody is in the IT arena, I think that a new executive coming into IT typically makes some major changes within 90 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's an important statistic to know, that new leadership changes things. So does a crisis situation. So does the announcement of a new client, of new big client. You know, all those kinds of things have ramifications, and most people don't look at the newsworthy items that are out there about their targeted customers and say, because this happened, how might that change their perception of the status quo? And usually, if you start thinking about it, you'll find that. But I find there's a backwards door to find that, and that's take a look at your existing customer base and saying, what in the world made them want to change now? You know, and just ask that question and be really, you know, when people call, if you get any call-ins, you know, what's driving this? What's happening within your organization today that is, you know, causing you to start researching this topic?
Sure, that makes sense. So if you are in the position where you're reaching out to a company with whom you've had no previous contact, first of all, does that even make sense anymore? I mean, there is this whole debate, is cold calling dead? So maybe we should start there. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I honestly believe you should. I've always believed you should. I mean, when people started talking about, well, you have to wait, you know, it's all about inbound leads and getting the leads in the database. I mean, I'm sorry. I live in a city that has a fairly decent sized city, and there are some companies that I would like to work for. And I have my choice of letting them find me or finding them, you know. And I'm not going to sit here and wait till somebody from General Mills stumbles across my website and finds something I like, enter it's my lead flow. I mean, the reality of it is any smart person who's trying to grow their business will target the companies that make sense for them to go after, and then will learn what they need to learn and mount a campaign. And even organizations, I mean, account-based marketing is an account-based selling is starting to become the big buzzwords right now, but it's really just common sense that you go after the business where you're a good fit and you can make a significant difference in their operations, in their business.
So you mentioned account-based marketing and account-based selling. For those who aren't familiar with those terms, what does that mean?
Well, it really means identifying those companies that you really want to go after and then aligning your corporate resources to invest in, you know, we're going to go after these companies, and they put more resources going after very specific organizations even and getting plans together to go in multiple doors to get lots of conversations going to keep momentum going inside your targeted organizations. It's a key to rapid growth, by the way. I mean, you know, why would you go a little here, a little there, a little everywhere? You know, I mean, it makes common sense.
Right. So coming back to where we started in this then, if you were putting together a list of companies that you wanted to approach, how much time is reasonable to spend on that initial screening? I suppose it depends how big the thing is you're selling.
And it depends on how big the market segment is. I mean, the reality is, I mean, I just came back from a company that's in the oil and gas industry, and there's not that many oil and gas companies, you know, I mean, big ones that they could sell to. I mean, they sell to people who have platforms out there in the middle of the ocean or along the shoreline. So their list is, by definition, fairly small because it's finite. Yeah. Other people look at what they're offering to the market and go, oh my God, we can sell everywhere to anybody. I mean, this is like so fun. You call on the whole world. But the truth of the matter is when you call on the whole world, you lose your message.
Right.
You know, lose your impact. You are saying nothing as opposed to saying something that's extraordinarily meaningful. So even a company who could sell to the world should, you can't message everyone. Your salespeople can't be sharp. Your marketing can't be on track if you're going everywhere. And so start somewhere in a market segment. Go after that and, you know, pick up the contingent business that comes in. But don't try to be everything to all people. It's a killer for companies who do it. And I have seen many companies either die an unseemly death or pivot if they get smart.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it comes down to the basic marketing principle of picking a niche. I mean, the more clearly defined your niche, the easier it's going to be.
Yes, and the faster you can build customers and you can get referrals and your referrals are credible and they help you springboard to the next opportunity and it's just everything is easier.
So, Jill, in an era where executives are all trying to shield themselves from the overflow of emails, calls, etc., How do you break through that? I mean, you mentioned trigger events.
Trigger events are really, really highly effective, by the way.
Okay.
And leveraging them and creating messaging. Because at that point, you know, what executives hate are sales letter emails that say, hi, this is Jill I'm Jill Conrath, and I'd like to introduce you to our crap, you know, our our lovely, exciting, leading edge, state-of-the-art technology, our wonderful, unique methodology, and I want to share this all with you. No executive wants to learn about your product. That's all on the internet.
Yep.
What they do want is somebody who can say, based on my work with other sales organizations, I know that developing your pipeline is a crucial KPI.
Right.
And we've been working with some other similar technology companies 2 years, and we've been able to increase their pipeline by 26.2% in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that is real.
Yeah.
And and then really just saying, would this be something that you'd be interested in learning more about, and inviting a conversation to take place? And that kind of message resonates with executives, and they will see people with that kind of messaging, whether it's email, voicemail. And I would also say the referral network is certainly something we can never ignore in sales, and salespeople should always be looking for how to build their referral base.
What would you advise a company that's a startup and they can't say we helped customer X do Y?
No, but what they do have is a purpose for the startup. And any company who is a startup decided to start because they saw problems out there in the marketplace that they thought they could help with.
Yeah.
And it could be that they're a graphic design firm and they've seen horrible graphics that have cost people business or prevented them from growing. Or it could be that they created a technology solution for an issue that really bugged them in their previous position.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to deal and talk with people about the issues is sufficient in many cases.
Okay.
You know, to talk with about the issues. I mean, people don't just start a company with no experience nowhere. I mean, typically they've been employed someplace before, you know, often, or they worked with things and they've seen the issues and decided to start something to address those.
Yeah. Why do you think it is, in an era where there is so much good information out there like yours about how to do sales effectively, why do I still get all these phone calls that are so bad from people? Why does that still happen even?
Well, I think there are a lot of people out there in the greater world who have this perception of what sales is.
Yeah.
And they just go and put on their stupid sales hat, and they reach out and do what they think sales is, but they never bother to educate themselves on what really is effective. They think they know, but they don't. And it's kind of like, you know, nobody would start a company without knowing how to balance their checkbook, because that kind of stuff is important, and so they learn how to do that. But for some odd reason, they think that sales is about spouting what your company does. And they're in for a rude awakening, because all they'll find is that nobody cares to have them spout
right
at all.
So when you get in front of a potential buyer, and so you got in on the basis of connecting with them over the problem and talking about the fact that you do have the potential or the experience to help solve that problem, when you go in for that first meeting with them, how much do you, I mean, obviously you want to draw them out and ask more than you're spewing. How do you strike the balance? How do you know when it's time to stop asking questions and time to start talking about what you do?
Well, first of all, I deal specifically with the B2B marketplace.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm going to answer in that context,
sure,
because it makes a difference. There are people who sell and they have one chance to sell.
Mm-hmm.
In the B2B marketplace, no decision is ever made on the spot.
Right. Yeah.
There are typically at least one other person involved.
And sometimes dozens.
Sometimes dozens of people.
Yeah.
And it takes, very few sales take place in less than 3 months. So the idea of spewing at all is premature.
Okay.
What is important is a conversation that keeps expanding to understand the scope of the challenge, the the objectives of the client, who else needs to be involved, and a continued discussion about, A, the business case first. And unless the business case is justified, there's no reason anybody's going to switch.
Right.
No matter how much they like your product, if there's no business case,
yeah,
it's irrelevant. And then once they've decided that you will, you know, fit, that changing makes sense, then it moves into what's the right solution for us. And so there are two huge decisions that have to be made. You know, should we change, and then with whom should we change?
Right.
And a smart seller would realize that if they start talking about their stuff early on, they're not talking about the business case.
Yeah.
they're talking about at the far end of the decision process when the customer says, yeah, we've decided to spend the money. Mm-hmm. So to me, the conversation always should be about, is it worth it to change? And that should be the focus. And a little bit of talk about case studies or what happens and the value of change is essential, and so is understanding the customer and trying to see if it makes sense. To me, a conversation about, here's what we've been doing, here's how we help other customers, what we need to see if it makes sense for you, and based on our experience working with other clients, it typically takes these people to get involved. So it's just it's almost a project management issue in a perspective, you know, what sales is today.
Well, and that's interesting, because this is starting to get to why, even though my podcast is about customer experience, I think this is so important, because the experience starts before they actually become a customer. I mean, that's why one of the things that drives me crazy is when you get these people who will lie to get you to pick up the phone. So it's important that you start being credible and honest right from the beginning. And yet there are still some sales books that say, you know, do whatever it takes to get them on the phone.
Yes, and that's pretty sleazy, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's kind of bizarre. Mm-hmm. So to what extent do you think how you approach the sale, I mean, you know, not talking about lying, but things that are a bit more subtle, how do you think you can handle things in a way that will make for a longer, smoother customer relationship if and when they do become customers?
Okay, good question. I can answer from 100 different perspectives. Let's say somebody calls you and says, I want to talk with you about what your company offers and we're interested in it.
Yeah.
I think that if you're a seller, you should slow that person down.
Okay.
Say, rather than jumping and go, oh, yes, I got a hot one on the line, you should slow them down and say, thanks so much for calling. I'm glad that, you know, you're considering us, but it helped me understand what's driving this change. This is something I said earlier. What's driving this change? Why are you interested now? What are you looking for? What are you trying to achieve? What factors are important? And then I think asking questions like, have you considered this? Or, you know, typically when we work with people, this is one of their criteria. Where does this factor in? And just sound like you're having a conversation to see if this is a good decision for somebody who might happen to call you.
Right. That makes sense.
You know, so that would be one way early on. I mean, I just did that with somebody earlier today, you know, that they wanted to talk to me about speaking. I said, slow down. You know, I may not be the right solution for you. So let's figure that out first.
Yeah.
And I think immediately that builds credibility, and it is true. I may not, you know?
Right.
But early on, just by, you know, people will want to tempt you into telling about this stuff because they really want to rule you out as quickly. So they might say, well, why don't you give me a quick overview of your stuff? And that's an invitation to pitch.
Yeah.
And the reality of it is you probably need an answer to that. Let me give you a brief overview, but Mr. Prospect, the reality of it is I have no clue if these will make any business sense for your organization. And until we talk about what you're trying to achieve and if there's any financial returns or if the financial value is significant enough, it's no sense, you know, going down that path for you or me. I mean, but that's having a legitimate conversation as business person to business person.
Mm-hmm.
And even, I mean, I'm just thinking more examples. Even when we take a look at presentations, you know, you've been invited, you're doing a presentation, and maybe there's even an RFP out.
Yeah.
And you're coming in to dance to the, you know, the music of the, come on in and do your RFP dance with us.
Yeah.
The reality is the best people who respond to RFPs don't come in and say, oh, let us tell you all about our company and the people that be working on your project and all of our great experience. And we have locations in all these areas around. Look at the map, you know, and look at everybody says about it. And these are all our wonderful clients. You know, I found the best people will come in and they will have the information that the client requested, and they will be ready to give it to the client, and they'll say, we've had a chance to review your RFP. We think you've got some really good things and we understand this, but we have some concerns about a particular area that we thought we'd better address with you before we did our presentation. Mm-hmm. And then they start having a conversation, working with them as if they're already on the team.
Yeah.
And working as if you're already part of the customer team and that you're... that it's essential that this is answered or discussed prior to moving ahead really positions you very differently from a salesperson who is trying to get the deal closed. And you're talking customer experience, and I think it's essential in the sale.
Although if you're doing an RFP, let's say, with government, you don't have that option.
I have to admit, I don't play with government. I'm B2B.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay?
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. Jill, is there anything you wish I had asked you and I haven't?
No, you put me on the spot pretty good.
If you found that useful, you might also want to go back to episode 79, where I talked to Marianne Vanella, another sales expert, and we talked specifically about cold calling. You'll find that at frankreactions.com/79. And if you are struggling with personal productivity, or if you have team members who are, I do recommend Jill's new book, More Sales, Less Time. I'll have a link to it on the show notes, and I'll also have a link to her website, where she's got a lot of really excellent content that will help you and your team become more effective at sales. And let's face it, as I think it was Dan Pink said, everybody is in sales. Whether it is selling your business services or within your organization selling customer experience and the importance of it, or even in your personal relationships. Sales is one of those things that we've all just got to get good at. That's all I've got for today. Please, if you've got any thoughts about who you would like me to interview or topics you'd like me to cover, just reach out to me, Tema, T-E-M as in marketing, A, at frankreactions.com, or on Twitter at Tema Frank, or on LinkedIn, and there's also a Frank Reactions Facebook page. I'd also be really grateful if you would be willing to head over to iTunes and give a review of this podcast. It really does help other people discover it. And I know it's a pain in the butt to do, especially because you might not even be in front of your computer when you're listening to this. About half my audience is, apparently, but the other half of you aren't. And we're all super busy, so taking time to do something like that, I know, isn't easy. But it would make me absolutely thrilled and honored. I will be back again in 2 weeks. And hope that we can have some good conversations in other venues in the meantime. Bye.